all of their excuses for not standing with us and passing common sense gun reform.
Nick Cipollino, we want to thank you for being with us, Managing Director for Law and Policy at Every Town for Gun Safety. And that does it for our show, Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Murphy, Nick Esner, Nermin Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Carla Wills, Tammy Warren, Afterina Nadura, Sam Alcoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Adriana Contreras, our General Manager, Julie Crosby, Becca Staley, our Director. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook, W297 BM, 107.3 Stony Brook. And it is just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday, and we have all kinds of late-breaking news we're going to be sharing as we begin another episode of Off the Wall. Okay, 1 hour is not going to be enough, but we're going to try. Wow. Moments ago, the verdict was announced in the Chauvin trial in Minnesota. And I think pretty much we can all agree, at least I sure hope we can all agree, justice was served. Justice was served about as well as it could have been served today. Guilty on all three counts, and remanded into custody immediately for the murder of George Floyd. And this is Emmanuel, joined by Kyle.
Over here.
You know, apart from the emotion of it just being over, I just feel this, this tremendous warmth, pride in all the people that stood up against injustice, because, boy, you can't draw a picture of injustice that's more accurate than what we have seen here over the past year, both with the video and with the refusal of people to back down from their demands for justice. I find it so inspiring, and I'm just really grateful for people that didn't back down. And I hope that we use this as fuel to keep going in the future, because there are so many more cases. I know, and this doesn't fix the system. Of course not. It doesn't mean we can't be happy for what happened today. And of course, it's a great tragedy that we're standing on to experience this happiness. But there's nothing wrong with feeling a sense of accomplishment. You know, that goes for so many people. You know, the jury only took the case yesterday, so for them to come back this quickly usually means bad news for the defense, usually means a quick prosecution. I was expecting maybe they would just go for manslaughter and not murder. I was worried about that because this was murder. There's just no other way. I mean, the evidence is right there in front of you. You see it. You see it happening. You hear the calls to stop. And you see how they were completely ignored, how callous that cop was. And not only him. Not only him. A true justice, I think more people would be paying a true penalty here. I can't really say if I was a cop, what I would do, because I don't know who I am if I'm a cop. But if I like to think if I was a cop and I saw a fellow cop doing that, I would stop them from doing that one way or another. And none of them did that. Not one of them did that. And that would have been, I've known people who've become cops And in at least a couple of cases, they have stood up against their fellow officers. It's a rare thing. And they pay the price for it whenever that happens. But it needs to be encouraged, needs to be rewarded when it happens. Didn't happen here. And that adds to the injustice. What do you think, Kyle? Crazy day, huh?
Yeah, really unexpected. Things were, I don't know, there was a calm of anticipation beforehand, but this moment is something I think will stand as a model for how to look at some of these really numerous cases. I mean, just example after example. But the case in particular just was presented very well and became stronger. You went in kind of having a feeling this is definitely something that this man is guilty of. It was so public and so forth. But the case, as you unfolded, as you saw so many different people witnessing it and their stories and perspective on it, you realize that this is just affirms your original inclination, I think, to the casual viewer. And there's so many people watching this, and it must be,
oh my god,
yeah,
it was on every network. I went through the dial, both on American and Canadian TV, and at least in the United States, every broadcast network was showing the trial. I think maybe Telemundo wasn't, but just about every broadcast. And that meant that this video was being seen everywhere. Everybody was witnessing what happened to George Floyd over and over again. And we needed to see that as a country. I think we needed to face that head on. And that makes a difference. Just like January 6th, you know, people need to see the ugliness, the injustice, in order to stand up against it. Because most people will stand up against it, given the opportunity to actually weigh for themselves what is right and what is wrong. I'd like to think that. You know, there's a lot of evil out there, a lot of people being led down a bad path, and I'm still of the belief that we can get them back, you know, onto a good path, and away from all the hatred and prejudice and ignorance and things that remain. But yeah, this was everywhere, and it needed to be everywhere, and we all need to learn from this, and take what we've learned from this to the next case of injustice, because there's always another case, and it's sickening. It's sickening to see how many, and it happens in subtle ways too. You know, it happened even over the past couple of days. Did you hear what Maxine Waters said?
Oh, yeah.
The representative from California. You know, I'll read you what she said, because I have it right in front of me. She was answering questions and talking about her views on the trial. And this is the controversial part of what she said. It's quote-unquote controversial, because I don't find it controversial at all. What should protesters do was the question. Well, we've got to stay on the street, and we've got to get more active. We've got to get more confrontational. We've got to make sure that they know that we mean business. Well, the right wing went ballistic. How dare this elderly black woman come to Minnesota where she doesn't belong and say these things? I mean, how uppity can you possibly get? My God! To see people speaking out against her with such passion, that to me is another example of exactly the injustice that we've been fighting.
Yeah, questioning her agency as a human being.
I've seen elected officials call for her arrest for saying that, for provoking violence. Where in that statement do you see any provocation of violence? We've got to stay on the street. You absolutely have to stay on the street. You absolutely have to. We've got to get more active. Yes. If it doesn't work, you have to get more active. We've got to get more confrontational. Absolutely. In your face. When you stand up against injustice, if you're not confronting it, You're doing it wrong. We've got to make sure that they know that we mean business. How else do you get their attention? So the way the right wing, and, you know, a lot of people that don't consider themselves on the right wing reacted to this was really kind of scary, because they don't react the same way when, Clint Eastwood or somebody says, try taking my gun. You'll see what happens. Okay, that's an actual threat of violence. Talk to any elected official who's a Republican and say, what would you do if the government came for your guns? You know, like you seem to think they're going to do. And they will respond with a threat to violence. But that's okay for some reason. It's okay when the middle-aged white guy does it. But the elderly black woman, no, we're not comfortable with that. The other thing that really bothered me about this was just the image of Black Lives Matter protests evoke riots and looting in these people's minds. And that is not the case. That is as far from the truth as you can possibly get. If you want to connect rioting with protests, fine, connect them. But don't connect Black Lives Matter to it. Because people who loot and riot and do things on their own are not doing it at the behest of an organization that you happen not to like. It's convenient for you to say that, maybe. It's just not true. There was, remember the Black Lives Matter protest in Port Jefferson last year?
I do.
That was one of the most inspirational, one of the most inspiring, you know, the same thing, inspiring events I've been to in a long time. The people there were just so gracious, so kind, so open, and so rational. And this is in the face of ugly, racist, pro-Trump people screaming at them from the side streets. Really embarrassing, but they handled that so well. Better than I could handle it. They just turned a blind eye to all the derision and provocation that those people were throwing their way. And they told their story. They told their story to a receptive crowd, and it was a beautiful day. It really was. And that is what most of these events are, is simply voicing your passion, your story, and being heard. But if you equate BLM with violence, you're not getting it. And it's not fair, because that is certainly not what the organization is about. That is not what happens at the events. And if you want to attach every bad thing that happens after the events to them, well, we can play that game with lots and lots of other events as well. We can go to Disneyland and see what happens after dark. It's not related. It's not related at all. And to say that by Maxine Waters urging people to stay on the streets, well, yeah, because black people on the streets has got to be violent. Don't you see the racism there? Don't you see that this is part of the same thing? These marches, these protests, these people standing up, it is so inspirational. We should all be taking notes.
It's a way to manifest it locally, too, and that visibility, the dialogue in the media, as well as politically, as far as concrete actions and policies and reforms and all of that attention is critical. If your neighbors aren't talking about it, if it's not an issue regionally, it doesn't have that recognition applying that sense of a movement, and that that these issues are in all of our communities, whether you see it or not. And, you know, if it's not visible to your life and your lifestyle, it may be something that people in your community go through, and by seeing a march, seeing demonstration, that is part of it, and that is the importance of that right in this country. So there's even, you know, concern and question, and it's all really a distraction from what people are trying to get out as far as awareness and that we need change in this country.
You know, it hasn't happened yet, but I'm sure the criticism will start flowing on Fox News about people celebrating the verdict or just treating police with disrespect, et cetera, et cetera. Right now, it's I guess it's still a little bit too early for that ugly sentiment to come out. I mean, you know, listen to Lee Zeldin, listen to Marjorie Taylor Greene. I'm sure they're ready to spout forth with their pro-cop, anti-black rhetoric. But for the most part, people are joining in celebration of justice being served. One time, hopefully not a one-time deal. But I think with most white people that I know express concern when things like this happen, you know, for property damage, as if that's an issue. Okay, let's look at it this way. Let's say the verdict had gone a different way, all right? I'm going to take it a couple steps past the totally acceptable remarks Maxine Waters made. What happens if, despite all the evidence, despite seeing in front of us, let's say a jury said, no, we believe the cop. He had a right to do it. You can go free. And George Floyd should have been a better person, should have followed orders.
Should have had better veins.
Yeah, whatever you want to say. I do not begrudge anyone from acting emotionally after a tremendous miscarriage of justice. Now, is that the same thing as saying, go and burn down the city? No, it's not the same thing. But it is understanding how people get completely distraught when time after time after time they are met with injustice. So I don't know if people can understand this, that basically saying that if you keep getting kicked, eventually you're going to react. And that's understandable. It's not the same thing as saying, go do this. You know, I'm trying to think of an example of, you know, some hero in a film that has, it's beaten down over and over and over again. And eventually he just reacts and tears down a building or something or destroys something of value because he's so frustrated and the crowd cheers because they're behind him as an individual. And what somebody does in a situation like that isn't always to their advantage. Sometimes they destroy the thing that they love most. It's emotion. It's a reaction to being stepped upon time after time after time. And if you don't understand that, there's something about humanity that you don't understand, because that's a totally legitimate human reaction. And if the verdict had gone the other way, I could totally understand people running amok. I could totally understand it. Do I want that to happen? Of course not. And I don't think they would want that to happen. But it's a human reaction. People do things like that. We should understand that. And when someone says, we need to stay in the street, we need to be confrontational, we need to let them know we mean business, that to me is a very rational statement. Saying that we can't back down. This is justice. This is important. And by backing down, we're pretty much embracing injustice. You know, she had to justify what she said, and she didn't have to do that. Maxine Waters, of all people, did not have to do that. Can you imagine Maxine Waters leading a riot? She is one of the most peaceful people I could imagine. I am nonviolent, she said. I talk about confronting the justice system, confronting the policing that's going on.
And the issue...
Don't interrupt Maxine Waters.
I'm sorry.
I'm talking about... Because she will come after you if you do that.
You're right.
Talking about speaking up. I'm talking about legislation. I'm talking about elected officials doing what needs to be done to control their budgets and to pass legislation. Oh, my God! The horror! So, please, listeners, do me a favor. If you see people jumping on Maxine Waters, I think they're introducing a bill. The Republicans are trying to introduce a bill to censure her in Congress. Tell them to shut up. Tell them to take a hike. You know, this is, it's hypocrisy to the highest level. It's racism. It's disgusting, and we're sick of it. And, you know, if I could build a statue with her statement on it about confrontation, I would. Because I think that's exactly what needed to be said.
That would fit neatly on a plaque.
Well, it's three sentences, so that's a big plaque, but I'm glad people are speaking up. I'm glad people are being loud. I'm glad people are being confrontational. And today it worked out. Today it worked out. Tomorrow it might not. In fact, there are going to be more cases of injustice. We've seen just in the past few weeks all the horrible cases of cops killing people when there really was a different way to go about it if they were properly trained. We've talked about this many, many times. And we don't seem to ever get to the point, just like with the whole gun conversation, we never get to the point of actually making the changes. We just talk about how horrible it is, but nothing changes. Maybe something will change now. Maybe we'll finally get to that point where the training gets to the degree where cops look to defuse situations rather than, you know, shooting at the first sign of any danger. That's not what a cop is. That's not what a cop should be.
I think the message will be loud and clear throughout this country to police and police forces about the way they're handling and day-to-day operations, their duties, the way they interact with people is under scrutiny. And I think leadership will step in. I think the president will probably speak to this later on and indicate that we are setting the tone and that this will not stand in our country any further. It's mm-hmm. been too long, and I think they'll really try to emphasize that so that it is an institutional change as well as a societal demand that, you know, we need to stop seeing these videos, we need to stop seeing these killings and this abuse of people's, of citizenry and mm-hmm. of people's right to life.
I'm so glad that Biden is in the White House right now, as opposed to what could have been in the White House. Because, compare what happened last year when all of this ugliness began, and Trump's reaction to it was basically to clamp down on the protesters, and not to actually reach out, sympathize, do any of that, because he doesn't do that. This is what we need. This is the kind of leadership we need right now. And I think Biden gets that. There's a lot that he can do differently, but he's listening. And that is something that is extremely significant. The whole immigration debacle that we're dealing with now. We don't have time to get into this, but Democrats have to start stepping up. Listen to Maxine, okay? Listen to what she says. Step up, be confrontational, because every time the crisis at the border, and you know, Biden should use the word crisis. I don't know what's going on with that, why he doesn't use the word crisis. It's a crisis, but it's not his crisis. They need to step up and say, yeah, it's a damn crisis, a crisis caused by your boy Trump, okay? Because he cut down the amount of refugees that were allowed in this country by 84%. 84%, you know what a massive cut that is? So, wow. After Trump is gone, where did all these extra people come from? Where do you think they came from? 84% times how many years? I can't do the math, but that's a lot of people. And yeah, of course there's going to be a backlog. Of course there's going to be a crowd. And what Biden is trying to figure out now is how to deal with all these people. Republicans, you know, we saw this on, I think, Vice News the other night. Republicans were asked, so what would you do? Would you actually send a child back, an unaccompanied child? And the callous response was, yes, we have to send a message. No, we're done with this. We're done with this horrible way of dealing with people, specifically people from other places that aren't quite like you. And Yeah, it's a crisis at the border right now. It's cleaning up your mess. And we should be supporting what Biden is trying to do. We should be making it better. We should be welcoming these people into our country because I want all of them to come here. I really do. They will make it a better place. They will. We certainly do need the help. And if we can get people away from bad situations, which many of which we've helped to cause, then we're doing good for the world. And maybe we can help make those places a little bit better. We certainly have the resources to do that.
Yeah, if it isn't about action either and concrete solutions that can move people forward and allow them to be a part of a humane process and get them into places that are suitable around the country and work internationally as well as far as how to address the international and global geopolitical aspects of it as well, and anything that the Republican side isn't bringing to that is movement. I don't think there's time to sit around and wait for it and expect something.
Yeah, there's a lot of sitting around waiting and trying to get the other side, which has no intention of cooperating at all.
They want it to fester.
And
be able to point at something.
We need to at some stage say, that's it, enough. Either you work with us or you become irrelevant. Immigration is just one of many issues. COVID-19, look where we are right now with vaccines. More than a quarter of this country has been totally vaccinated. That is incredible. Now, look at Brazil. A country which, very much like we were a year ago, has a leader that doesn't believe COVID-19 is that serious and has basically been mocking people who wear masks. And they're at, I think, about 4% now, and a lot of people are dying. That could have been us. Don't tell me elections don't matter. That could have been us. And the more people who don't take the vaccine, the worse the situation gets. It's being proven over and over again. I'd like to think that there is a certain level of sanity that's taking over now, where people say, you know, enough with your conspiracy theories about microchips and some kind of international plot. There's a damn disease out there that's killing hundreds of thousands of your fellow citizens, and if you don't believe that, then there's something wrong with you that needs a different kind of vaccine. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but this is real. This is real. I'm really proud of the people I know and the people around me that are taking it seriously, that are getting the vaccine, that are staying healthy. 25%, that is something to be proud of. It's not enough, though. Don't listen to idiots like Ted Cruz who say, okay, I got my vaccine, I'm going to take the mask off. No, look, these flimsy little white cards that you get, guess what? They're easy to duplicate, to forge, and people are doing that because people are idiots. All right. So just because somebody says they got the vaccine, even if they show you a card, doesn't mean they're telling the truth. So you don't know who actually got the vaccine and who didn't. All right. So until we get to a stage where so many people have gotten the vaccine that even those idiots that are lying about it won't make a difference, we still have to all walk around with the damn masks on. Blame the people that aren't taking it seriously for us having to do that. When we get to 50%, that's when you're going to start seeing things change as far as attitude, because 70% is within reach then. And 70% is the magic number that, okay, we're pretty much at herd immunity at that point. And again, that's just for our country. The world, whew, the world's only at about 2.5% vaccinated. We need to improve that as well, or it's really not going to accomplish much if we get ourselves at herd immunity, but the rest of the world is suffering. That means can't go anywhere, can't have people come here. So we need to listen to the science as we have done from the beginning, and there have been no real surprises. Pretty much all the predictions have come true. Yeah, there have been things we've learned. We've learned about the efficacy of wearing masks. We've learned about how some vaccines work and how some vaccines work differently. But pretty much everything that was predicted has come true. You know, the surges have happened when they told us the surges were going to happen. There are some people that the vaccine didn't work for. That's not a scandal. People, every day I get email from people saying, look, people are getting COVID even though they got the vaccine. Yeah, you know, the number that says 91% effective, what do you think the other 9% is? Do your math. So, yeah, this is exactly what we were told to expect.
Birth control sometimes doesn't work. I mean, there's plenty of other examples in medicine, I think. And I think, you know, let's be honest, people are gross, and there's going to be other infectious disease. So get comfortable with some kind of face barrier in just your general toolkit of, I guess, apparel or personal hygiene. If you travel in the future and if you are in large gatherings, you may just want to have one around in your pocket, close by. That's not a huge burden at this point.
No.
We have enough and many types, and there's been lots and lots of discussion about it. And it's a simple request, and in certain situations, we've no time for, you know, getting into the repeating displaying our knowledge of something that everybody's talked about over and over and over again. It's crazy. But the bottom line is that issue has not gone away. We're all still at the effect of something really huge and historic, yet another huge and historic thing that
once
needs
a century
a lot of attention, and getting vaccines available more widely and addressing other issues of access and monitoring of side effects and so forth it's going to be an ongoing thing. Information about new age groups and boosters, that's all stuff we still don't know that much about.
Right.
So it's got to be on the forefront of what is a very busy time in this country.
I am impressed with the rollout, both in New York State and throughout the country, because you have people that are taking it seriously in charge, and that makes all the difference. You know, you don't have to like the people in charge, but you can at least acknowledge that, we're getting somewhere. We are getting somewhere. If you know somebody who has not gotten vaccinated yet, help them. Help them either realize that they need to get a vaccine or help them to get an appointment, because the appointments are easy to get now. They really are. And there's no excuse for not getting it unless a doctor tells you specifically to your face that you should not get a vaccine, and you're of a very small minority if that is the case. But it's not something that your politics dictates at all. It should not be.
And it's strongly recommended. It's not mandatory. You have a choice, but you don't get to muddy the situation and tell other people what to do because of something you can't substantiate.
Right, right. And just because you know one conspiracy theorist that says something does not make it true. Listen to the scientists, listen to the doctors, and not just people who put doctor in front of their names who aren't really doctors. You know what I'm talking about. People in the actual medical profession. And we've talked to a number of those people, whether it's dentists or whether it's doctors or you know, all sorts of people. And in my case, they've all said the same thing. For God's sake, you know, we have to take this seriously. I've seen people die. You know, people who aren't in ERs. And there's no reason for that. This was 567,000 people dying in this country alone. We're still number one in that field. That's not imagination. That's not something that that is being conjured up. Those are real people. And to claim that it's being overblown is a true insult to everybody who has been a victim of this. Let's keep it from another half a million people dying. And it's easy. It's so easy to just take the precautions, get the vaccine, live your life. And the longer we don't do that, the reason is because of people that are arguing for no reason. All right, I think we made our point. Shall we get into our feature?
Well, I don't know. Do you think we should do that other thing that we sometimes do?
Well, that's our feature, right? Or are you talking about something else?
No, the feature. Yeah,
that's what I meant, the feature.
I'm ready.
That's 10 seconds wasted. All right. Well, then I have to start up the theme. There it is. And the projector. Yes, another edition of Films of the Year That Was, where Kyle and I take a journey into memory lane of Academy Award-winning films. And we're up to 1997 right now.
Yes.
This is what I was afraid of.
This is...
All the films. I'm starting not to like all the films.
This is really an epic. I will...
Yeah.
I will say a lot about it, but the film... For Best Picture in 1997
Yes.
Necklace.
No, it's not. What's Necklace? I never heard of that.
Oh, and I'm sorry. No, it's it says here Titanic.
Was there a film called Necklace? Because I wouldn't
it's
mind.
It's funny that you don't.
I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Look. You can't tell.
No.
That's pretty much what this thing's about.
Oh, it's about because there's a necklace in it. Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of hoping that we'd somehow miss that one, that maybe it came in second or something like that, but... This is, you know, as we get closer to the present, all the films make me roll my eyes, you know, like The English Patient and Forrest Gump and now Titanic.
What is that? We need some sociologist or some... What is the term for this sort of malaise over an era? Half an era?
What's the term for... The film is 3 hours and 15 minutes long, and the version we have has three different commentary tracks, and I feel obliged to watch all of them. There's a term for that, and it's not making me happy.
True. There was... okay. A love story and happenstance... People finding their way onto this majestic ship.
Yeah, big boat.
It's a ship. And it happened to be the White Star Line, and this ship didn't make it. It had some problems.
Well, thank you, Kyle, for giving away. Maybe people wanted to see this film and didn't know what happened to the ship. But yeah, okay, now you know Titanic didn't make it.
So around that fact is this... love story. A woman played by Kate Winslet and a male protagonist, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, it's...
And he basically is trying to... He gets on this ship through like a gambling win.
He and his friend win two tickets to a poker game somehow.
Right.
And, so they get onto this death cruise.
And he steals her away, sort of. She falls for him while aboard.
Okay, she's an upper-class daughter. This is something I didn't understand. Maybe it was explained, but she is betrothed, is that the right word, this jerk who is a wealthy heir. But by her marrying him, somehow she saves her family. Because they're bankrupt, but this puts her back into what they call royalty. They're all American. Did you know this? They're all American. They're from Philadelphia, okay? The jerk is from some rich American family. And Leonardo DiCaprio is from Wisconsin. Why are they all in Southampton in England getting on this boat? That's what I couldn't understand. Why are they? Why isn't this taking place in America? Instead, I thought everyone was British. Okay, that's what I assumed, or at least European in one way or another. But no, they're all going back to America at the same time. It just seemed a little weird.
Or coincidental, like too perfect, maybe.
Yeah,
there's a little of that, and a lot of water.
Awful lot of water. Yeah, that's true.
And there's some aspect of it just from a technical perspective that I think I realize what it was that bugged me, and that was some of the animation of the ship is looks too as I just said, perfect, a little too rendered and so forth.
In fairness, 1997, you know, it was kind of a new thing.
Well, what I realize, and I don't want to get into that too much, it's an aside from the story itself, is that the cinematic limits were being pushed a little bit, and I think this was released in 3D. So what happened
was... It was released in 3D afterwards, yes.
Was it afterwards?
Yes.
Okay. So there's some aspect of it maybe being transferred or originally designed to work with that format. I wasn't. Was that?
I don't know
a
if that was. I don't know if that was what they were thinking at the time. But I'm grateful that sitting through 3 hours and 15 minutes of this, that I wasn't subjected to further annoyance by having to sit through 3 hours and 15 minutes of 3D Titanic. I didn't want that at all.
Maybe the original design of the ship lent itself to that, and it had a bit of a rebirth or reemergence mm-hmm. after the original release.
They kept figuring out ways to make more money out of this film by re-releasing it many, many times.
It is incredible. I think Celine Dion has a residency to this day singing about this love story. But
any other points from this film that you care to bring up? I've got some opinions about some things, but...
That was just the interiors and stuff, it was very familiar from our own travels.
Yeah, we took a boat, not like that, much bigger.
A different version of basically the same...
Same company.
Same journey.
Mm-hmm. They don't like to talk about it still.
It's discussed. I mean, there's a history there, and, all corporations, they're fine with it, and they have a handle on the voyage. So... it was beautiful just seeing how they applied the aesthetic in this journey and what the atmosphere was like. It was kind of cool, and it was cool how it started in present day with this.
I forgot that it starts in present day 1997 or 1996.
A lot of people forget that.
And you're basically seeing a very old Rose. Rose was her name, right?
That's Kate Winslet. Yeah.
And she's like 100 or something. And she's being brought on board this, scavenger ship or something that is making dives.
Treasure hunting, yeah.
Treasure hunting, looking for a particular necklace that she happened to be painted in the nude, just wearing the necklace, nothing else. Apparently, it was a necklace that dated back to, Louis XIV or something. It's immensely valuable, and just the hint of being able to find that was enough to finance a voyage to go to the Titanic and look for it. So she is a key character as far as all that goes.
The rare Heart of the Ocean diamond.
Mm-hmm.
And she, is brought aboard the Akademik Mitzlov Keldysh.
Right.
And as the story went, so she is brought aboard and starts the historic part of this in recounting her coming aboard this great ship.
I can remember. It was a spring day. Probably, I don't know what time of year it was, but basically the whole thing is a flashback.
Yeah, and so can we ruin the how things?
Well, go ahead, ruin it. I mean, they ruined the film.
Okay.
And made it.
Well, whoa, ease up.
No, honest, it was impressive. No, I will say it was impressive. I did not really feel time going by. It was a riveting story. I just thought that it was very sappy, and I didn't really. There was a period in the film where everybody is going nuts, and the boat's sinking and all that. Where you didn't see either Rose or Jack, Leonardo DiCaprio, for like at least 10 minutes. And I realized, wow, that was kind of cool. Here they are again. But that period where they weren't there, I didn't miss them. I didn't. I was engaged in other people jumping to their desks and things like that. It was, you didn't need so much of them is my point.
Well, that's kind of what I meant when I started our conversation referring to the emphasis of the story and this ship wrecking. It's not really about that. It's about this this story that was happened to happen on this great wreck,
mm-hmm.
which is tragic and touching and all of that. But the discussion and the characters of the captain and all of that is not part of it. It's just a real flash during the emergency itself.
Right.
And you see a lot of the social machinations of people scurrying.
It just seemed a bit overblown. I mean, these things exist, but
it wasn't given air. It wasn't taught. It wasn't opened up.
I just, I know people were caught up in all these things, but boy, why is Rose engaged to this evil guy who slaps her? And he's not even married, and you can still get away. You don't have to be a part of this. But her mother's also on the boat. If that family is bankrupt, how come they can take ocean cruises? I don't know that either.
Well, Cal discovers Jack's sketch of Rose in an insulting note.
Who's Cal?
Cal's the jerk.
And, oh, that's right, he's the jerk.
And then they try to tell him about this dang collision. He retaliates by having his helper slip the necklace into Jack's pocket.
Yeah, this is after theft. After it crashed into the iceberg.
They got to do work here.
They still have to be jerks.
Yep. They're trying to let this play out here. And,
okay.
Back in the present, the character, the older Rose character, finishes her story, and the treasure hunter abandons his search. Alone on the stern, Rose takes out the heart of the ocean, which has been in her possession all along, and she drops it into the sea over the wreck, and that's it.
Now, can I just talk about the villain, the true evil character in this film? We both know who it is,
oh,
right?
I've heard about this.
What? What have you heard?
Well, I thought it was it was the iceberg, right?
No, not we're not going to personify the iceberg. Who would ever do a thing like that? Yeah, SNL did it. I know. No. Who would you say is the evil character in this film?
I don't know. I'm put on the spot. You're kind of pressing me. What's the deal?
Pick a character.
Are we talking here? Like, it's just, the...
Who, in your opinion, is the most evil character in the film? Simple question.
I guess the treasure hunter, because they're trying to, like, monetize this...
Huh.
And, you know, this graveyard.
Grave robbing? You know what? I hadn't thought about that.
Well, there's an angle.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, that's not the nicest thing in the world to do. But no, of course.
What are you getting at?
I mean, I thought it was obvious to everybody, but for God's sake, Rose. Rose is a cold-blooded killer. Did you not see that in this film? Did we see the same film? She
almost tried to jump off the back of the thing.
She killed Jack. She killed Leonardo DiCaprio.
You're right. And lied about it.
Well, I mean, this is what she did.
Wow.
Think about how the film ends. And I'm assuming people have seen this, because everybody's seen it. But basically, she's on a damn lifeboat, right? She's on a lifeboat. And what happens, you know, Jack stays behind. She's on the lifeboat. But no, she wants to be with Jack, so she jumps off the lifeboat. And so she's back on the ship now. The lifeboat goes away without her. And we all know how it ends. They jump into the ocean, and they're able to find a panel, but it's only big enough to hold one person, or one person can float on top of it. And poor Jack has to hold on to the side, and eventually he dies of hypothermia and sinks to the bottom of the... First of all, why wasn't he wearing a life jacket? He sank right away. Everyone was wearing a life jacket, but okay, whatever. And don't you see, you know, if she hadn't jumped off of that lifeboat, presumably he would have wound up in the same place because he was the one leading them. He would have jumped off the boat in the same place. He would have found that panel. He would have been one person, and he would have been able to float on top of that. And Rose, by jumping off the lifeboat, killed him. And nobody expects her to answer for that. And I just think that's completely unfair. And then, to make it even worse, you know, you think maybe she's been redeemed by the time she's 100, but no, she's got this valuable treasure in her pocket, which she's been keeping all these years for some reason, and she throws it into the ocean, where it'll never be found. Don't you think something that valuable might have been able to help some people, you know? Yes. Okay, you don't want it? Well, you know, you could probably bail out an entire country from their national debt with something that valuable. But no, you got to make a statement. You got to toss it into the water because you don't care about treasure, about rich things, about people who don't see you for who you are. Well, I see you for who you are, Rose. Cold-blooded killer and a thief. I'm sorry. Disgusting, as far as I'm concerned. And I still don't know why they were all traveling on that boat in the first place.
They're trying to get back to Brooklyn, right?
Was that it? I don't know. We're out of time, though, so that's Titanic. Let's hope that things start getting better. We still have a foreign film to see from 1997. Hey, on the theme of justice, there's been talk about this horrible idea in Europe called the Super League. Oh, my God. You know, we've talked about football many times on this show. You know, European football, soccer, and... The thing that always has attracted me is the system of massive amounts of leagues and divisions and relegation and demotion, basically meaning that small teams have a chance to become big teams, or players have a chance to be recognized. Well, in the wake of the pandemic, the bigger teams, and I'm talking about maybe 15 teams, 10, 15 teams out of thousands of teams, literally. England alone has hundreds. But these ones, you know, the Manchester Uniteds, the Atletico Madrids, the Barcelonas, they have said, you know what, we're better. We deserve all the money. And we don't care about these smaller teams. Of course, they didn't say it quite that way. But basically what they proposed, and they proposed this on Sunday, we knew it was coming, but basically it's a league of 15 to 20 teams where they only play each other, and they don't play anyone else. And basically competing with Champions League, competing with Europa League, and basically making regular seasons almost meaningless as well. This has been met, I've never seen anything quite like this, over the past a couple of days with almost unanimous fan condemnation. And you know, you need your fans. Or do you? Because I see a lot of contempt towards fans being expressed by these big major teams. And it all kind of boils down to teams being bought by American billionaires and rich oil barons from the Middle East, ruining the game, basically ruining it by making it all about profit and money. I saw a sign today from a demonstrator saying that football is not a TV show. And in those people's eyes, that's all it is a TV show, because this is all about TV rights and profit. The beauty of the game in other countries is that a team is part of a community. And I think that's sort of what drew me to it. It's not necessarily a business that's just there to earn a profit. It's a part of the community. Many times the fans have ownership in the team. They don't move. They don't transfer to other cities. They stay where they are. It's very rare that a team goes someplace else or goes out of business. It does happen, but it's extremely rare. This is more like forcing an American system on their traditional way of doing things, where you don't have relegation, you don't have demotion or advancement, where the best teams move on to a higher league and the worst teams move to a lower league each year. This is just the major teams stay the major teams, and the minor teams just become more and more irrelevant. The minor teams will make less money, the major teams will make more money. It's disgusting. It goes against everything the games, the leagues have stood for up until this point. And this is just happening literally moments ago. But Manchester City was part of this. They withdrew today. Chelsea, part of this. They, I believe, are on the verge of withdrawing, if they haven't already. One by one, teams are leaving this idea, teams that have committed to it, because they're seeing the fan backlash. They're seeing how people are opposed to this kind of thing. And it's, to me, it's inspirational because it shows the power of the common person, as we all are. You know, when we speak up, when we unite, and we say this is wrong, eventually something changes. Eventually somebody hears you. Eventually the pressure matters. And this can be applied to so many different things in our lives. So many different things. So hopefully we're seeing the death of the Super League before it ever gets off the ground. Hopefully we see the game of football preserved as something that involves communities and has minor teams that are supported by the major teams, because that is how the game works in the first place. You have to have different levels. And maybe we'll feel empowered because we saw something that was wrong, we spoke out, and it got changed. There is nothing you cannot apply that to. You know, look at what's going on in this country on many levels. When we feel helpless about something, let's say, you know, gun control for an example, and we resign ourselves to the fact that nothing can change, it's not true. Things can always change, but you have to speak up, you have to unite, you have to make yourself vocal, and in the words of Maxine Waters, confrontational. There's nothing wrong with that. That's how you make change. So, I don't know, today is kind of a good theme for justice, for getting things done to listen to what people have to say. It matters.
Certainly, yeah. Getting things right and activated communities, those club teams, they could take care of infrastructure. I think that's what that investment was supposed to be, is infrastructure. You could get local fans to help with that kind of stuff, or be a part of a membership for a fund that did something. There are so many different ways to do that, but do not trade that immediate way of getting infrastructure for media dollars or pounds or euros, and in trading throwing out that loyalty of those, of that infrastructure of fans.
Exactly.
That has been there and will be there. I think that just is a real short sale if you don't see that as an owner.
All you're doing is going to see a superstar who will never acknowledge you, who is just, you know, in the clouds someplace, that's not what it's about. If you're going to be part of a community, and there is, you know, sometimes there's ugliness involved in that too. We're not, turning a blind eye to the problems that football has overseas. But there is a beauty to it as well. When we went to see the Southampton game, the same time we took the boat over there.
Oh, that was so fun.
It was an amazing experience because we were part of a community that embraced us, that welcomed us. And that's not the kind of thing that we're used to in the States. It doesn't work the same way. And Southampton is not one of the teams, I believe, that was part of the Super League, so that's another plus for them. But to simply change the game, and not just in one country, but throughout Europe, so that it's only about the superstars, no, that's never what it's been about. And maybe we need to take a step back and have less mega superstars and have less billionaire owners and make sure it's not just about making profits at the cost of everything else. That's never what the game has been about. So fingers crossed next week at this time, hopefully there will be no more talk of Super League. Or one other good bit of news, the helicopter on Mars. Wow, the second time in humanity's history on a planet that a first flight has happened. We missed the first one with the Wright brothers, but we didn't miss this one.
Certainly. I love the photos and video of that Ingenuity aircraft. Space aircraft, air spacecraft.
It was only 30 seconds, went up, came down, and, you know, I saw the video, didn't seem to have any trouble with that.
Yeah, and stabilized itself and just returned as was expected. So it was one step to, I think they get five more flights out of this.
Why does it have to be only five?
Hey, I mean, for a first vehicle that can do this kind of stuff and maybe the kind of things they'll learn about stabilizing it and just, for me, what was interesting is seeing the physics, like seeing something drop, like the gravity or lack thereof there, just to see kind of the way it fell was interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
from the shot of the rover itself.
Well, they have less gravity on Mars, but the physics works the same way. And, it's interesting to see that, and we need to see more of that. And it's awesome to see advances in science. And I'm blown away by the fact that we can do things like this. We can send these rovers over there and land in a particular place and control them and communicate with them. That, to me, is really inspirational.
Control your robots, people.
Boy, what a positive show this was. want to thank people for listening. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. If you have any questions, concerns, anything that you want to share with us, we would love to get your feedback. And we do like reading our listeners' email. Not quite at the stage we can take phone calls yet, but we will be in the fairly near future, I think. We'll see. Stay tuned for Finn. Keep listening to WUSB. Oh, yes, and please pledge WUSB. The phone number for pledging is 631-632-6901. You might get voicemail. If you get voicemail, leave a message, and somebody will get back to you. You can also go to WUSB.FM and pledge in that way. But for now, theme is justice. I think we should go out with something that espouses justice. What do you say?
I'm all in.
Have a good night.
So long.
I want justice. Give me justice. I want justice. Me say that give me justice. I want justice. Give me justice. I want justice. Give me justice. Give me justice. Give me your, 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 give me